Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's a Wednesday morning. It's May 18th. Always a blessing to join you on the EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, and a lot of news going on today. Hard to keep up with it. We had a little bit of a setback in Michigan, so I ask you to pray for the Great Lakes State. Very pro-life state because we have so many really good restrictions in terms of parental consent and parental notification, all kinds of limits. But the left has is pulling out all the stops. And so yesterday we get this news, and it's going to be a news story about it coming up in a minute. And we're also going to be updating this on a very special edition of EWTN News in Depth with Monsignor Alvarado coming up on June 3rd, where all of the contributors that have been covering life after Roe debate in the States, and we're going to be updating this. But just so you know, we had a setback regarding legal efforts. So the left went to the courts, which is obviously what they always do because they know they can't win when they go to the polls with this issue. And they were able to get a judge to put an injunction in place to stop our trigger law from going into effect. Now, in Michigan, we're one of the states that, please God, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, a trigger law would go into effect and ban abortion. So the left, in addition to having this crazy petition drive, which is trying to wipe out every single restriction affecting some 20 things that are already in place to protect and impact life, they are now going to the courts. And the judge they went to, I just found out this morning during an interview I did in my first hour of my program, the judge is a big donor to Planned Parenthood. Coincidence? I think not. Now, she should have recused herself from that case, but she obviously didn't. So who knows? The Alliance for Defending Freedom is addressing this. They're working on the case. And I would think, I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV or the radio, but I would think, based on this judge's connections to Planned Parenthood, it could be possible maybe to get this overruled fairly quickly. Again, we'll talk about that from a legal perspective. But what we need to do is continue to educate ourselves. I can't say this enough. In Michigan, we've put together an amazing coalition. We've got Catholic churches, Protestant churches, a Catholic conference. Our Archbishop continues to put out statements and educate this in the Archdiocese of Detroit. All different pro-life groups from all over the state coming together for this wonderful effort that has not only a list of resources on what we do in Michigan for women and children, but the extreme attempts by the left to get rid of any type of method, health regulations, parental consent. So it's shocking. And what's even more shocking, well, maybe not, the way they present it. It's all about health when it's just the opposite. So brothers and sisters, those of us, and I know many of you are involved in the pro-life movement, but we need to continue to educate ourselves and to educate others as to what is really at stake here. Because don't assume that people know what's going on. People sitting in the pews, even if they're hearing a good homily or getting good information from their parish, from the pro-life committee, I would say the vast majority of the time, the average Catholic, even if they're attending Mass on a regular basis, goes out into the world and is fed by sources that are not just not pro-life, but are involved in a big propaganda campaign. So there's a lot of news to discuss, and this goes not only to the pro-life issue, but also to this whole thing, which is actually under the pro-life category, but gender ideology, which we're going to be discussing right after the break with Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morse from the Ruth Institute. They have a big conference coming up in June. So we'll talk about that, and I'm sure she'll be able to address the issue of abortion as well. And then we're going to wrap up with our very own Joan Lewis regarding what's going on with the Pope in Rome and a beautiful catechesis he gave today on the elderly, continuing in his general audience talking about the elderly. But again, I just want to encourage you that we need to roll up our sleeves to pray, but also to get even more involved. What do we see in Scripture? To whom much is given, much is expected. And I know we all feel like we're punch drunk and, you know, we're in the ring and we just keep, you know, getting hit this side, that side. But we get up and we go on, as Dr. Meg Meeker said the other day. We continue the battle for life from womb to tomb. And they wouldn't be doing this. Take this as an encouragement. Because if we weren't making a difference, they wouldn't be going to such extremes. They wouldn't have to. But we are. Yes, this is a David and Goliath situation, but remember what happened with David and Goliath. All right. So it's just on my heart this morning because I did an interview with Kristen Polo, who's an amazing young woman working with this wonderful coalition to support Michigan women and children. She was just on a show last week with another dynamo here in Michigan, Aaron Marcino, who's a pro-life attorney, debating the pro-life cause, and they did such a great job. So proud of them. So that is an update, and of course, please stay tuned to all of our news programs and news sites, whether it is the Catholic News Agency, The Register, EWTN News Nightly, EWTN News In Depth, of course, Crest in the Afternoon, or many other programs here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I know I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you this morning, but this whole thing with this latest effort from this judge connected to Planned Parenthood. Just got my Italian up once again. All right, National Weather Service, what's the weather look like? It's going to be raining and heavily in a number of parts of the country. Strong to severe thunderstorms possible today in parts of the Ohio Valley, Upper Mississippi Valley, and South Central Plains. The storms could produce heavy rain and flooding in those areas. And then we have a strong cold front that will be sweeping through the Northwest, with rain, mountain snow, and high winds. So you have a little bit of everything across the country. And then finally, they're saying, according to the National Weather Service, heat and record high temperatures are likely across the southern U.S. So that's the weather for the U.S. of A. Do hope you can stay tuned for the entire hour and all of our programming here on EWTN. All right, let's get right to the news. It's a busy news morning. It is 6 minutes past the hour. It is a Wednesday morning, and you are listening to EWTN. Well, our very own Joan Lewis will have more on this a little bit later on in the program. The Holy Father urging Catholics today to feel free to protest spontaneously to God when faced with suffering and injustice. Reflecting on the book of Job and his general audience address in St. Peter's Square today, the Holy Father saying, God is not afraid of our prayer of protest. In his continuing catechesis on the meaning and value of old age, he told the faithful, Job's persevering faith amid profound suffering led him to understand that God, who often appears silent in the face of evil, is nonetheless mysteriously present with his redemptive mercy and love. All of us, he says, know situations where good people endure sufferings that appear unjust and unbearable. Yet, as Job did, the Holy Father explained, he continued to put their faith in God's promises. A Michigan Court of Claims judge, as we mentioned earlier yesterday, issuing a preliminary injunction against Michigan's 1931 abortion law, finding Planned Parenthood is likely to prevail in a lawsuit, saying the law violates the state constitution. Under yesterday's ruling, the state could not enforce the 1931 law should Roe v. Wade be struck down. A Michigan law from 1931 includes two key components. One, making any abortion a felony unless it's done to protect the life of the pregnant person. Secondly, it also criminalizes selling or advertising medications that could induce an abortion. Right to Life of Michigan, which is not a party to the lawsuit, is reviewing the statement and will be commenting later this week. Church leaders in the Holy Land, as Thaddeus Jones tells us, are condemning violence by the Israeli police after the death of a journalist.
Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Pierre Battista Pizzaballa, Greek Orthodox Patriarch Theophilos III, and the bishops and faithful of the Christian communities have underscored in a common statement their condemnation of a violent intrusion carried out last Friday by the Israeli police in the funeral procession carrying the body of reporter Shireen Abu Akleh. The incident took place as Shireen Abu Akleh's coffin was being transported from St. Joseph's Hospital to the Greek Melkite Cathedral Church. The denunciation of the churches in the Holy Land, issued with a common statement, decried the attitude of the Israeli police who broke into the hospital, disrespecting the memory of the deceased and forcing the pallbearers almost to drop the coffin. The statement noted, the condemnation follows that already expressed by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres after news of the death of the reporter who worked for the Al Jazeera television network. Shireen Abu Akleh was shot in the head during an operation by the Israeli security forces in the city of Jenin in the West Bank. Guterres called for an independent investigation to clarify the facts of what happened.
In California, Orange County officials say the deadly shooting at a Taiwanese Presbyterian church luncheon was a politically motivated hate incident.
Sheriff Don Barnes says investigators have found evidence that the gunman who killed one person and wounded five others was upset about political tensions between China and Taiwan.
We know that the subject involved is a U.S. citizen who immigrated from China. He has lived in the United States for many years, including other states.
The sheriff says the accused shooter is 68-year-old David Cho of Las Vegas. The man who died was 52-year-old Dr. John Chang, who Sheriff Barnes calls a hero for charging and tackling the gunman, which gave time for others to also tackle him and tie his legs with extension cords.
A man, meanwhile, under arrest in connection with a mass shooting at a Dallas hair salon, which police believe was also racially motivated. Jeremy Smith's girlfriend telling police officials he thought that Asians were out to get him.
During our investigation, detectives learned that 2 years ago, Smith had a motor vehicle crash with an Asian male. Since this crash, Smith has had panic attacks and delusions.
That's Dallas Police Chief Eddie Garcia, who says they now believe Smith, who is African-American, may be linked to two other attacks on Asian-owned businesses in the Dallas area. He's accused of shooting three Koreans at the beauty parlor last week. He faces three charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon for that attack. And a firm being hired by Oxford Community Schools in southeastern Michigan to investigate the November 30th high school shooting that killed four students and injured seven others. A father of a survivor of the shooting says the school was notified of that danger posed by the suspect.
You guys were notified by your staff, not once, not twice, but arguably three times, but we don't know because we don't have that insight or that information. And he was shot along with four children who aren't here.
The district has twice denied the attorney general to investigate, saying at the time they wanted to wait until the case was settled in court. The school board president now says waiting for that doesn't serve the community, and they're moving forward. With thousands of votes left to be counted, the Pennsylvania GOP Senate primary is still too close to call, as Mike Bauer explains.
A finished vote count may take a day or two to get to, or a recount may be possible, as Pennsylvania's election rules require an automatic recount if statewide candidates finish within 0.5% of each other.
As it stands now, the Trump-backed surgeon-turned-TV host, Dr. Mehmet Oz, and hedge fund executive David McCormick are within a half percentage point of each other. That was earlier this morning. And conservative commentator Kathy Barnett is in third place, about 7 points behind Oz and McCormick. A Senate showdown in North Carolina taking shape for November. Democrat Sherry Beasley and Republican Ted Budd clinching primary victories last night, putting the state in the national spotlight again. Budd speaking to supporters after his win.
So when President Trump endorsed me last June, he said this. He said, Ted, I'm endorsing you because you never wavered on America First policies.
In the GOP race for a House seat, Chuck Edwards edging out first-term Congressman Madison Cawthorn to secure the nomination. Mark Mayfield tells us a Chinese plane crash that killed 132 people may have actually been an intentional nosedive.
The China Eastern Airlines flight crashed into a mountain in southern China back in March, killing 123 passengers and nine crew members. A report in the Wall Street Journal says a probe into the crash indicates that someone in the cockpit had put the Boeing 737 into a near vertical nosedive. Officials say black boxes recovered from the wreckage show that the plane's controls were used to pitch the aircraft into a dive. Records show that the plane was cruising at 29,000 feet before it suddenly plummeted into the side of a mountain.
Drivers waking up to even more pain at the pump. Gas prices are up another 4 cents. AAA putting today's national average at $4.56 a gallon. California, it's the highest there, topping $6 a gallon. Next, Hawaii, followed by Nevada, Washington State, Alaska, and Oregon. Trey Thomas tells us Twitter is still planning to complete, it says, its $44 billion deal with Elon Musk, even as the world's richest person is hesitating.
The social media company made that plain in an SEC filing Tuesday night. The Twitter board also told Bloomberg it intends to close the transaction and enforce the merger agreement. Musk put the brakes on negotiations Tuesday. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO said the buyout can't go forward unless Twitter's CEO proves the platform has fewer than 5% fake accounts.
And finally, in the news segment at 14 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connection here on EWTN, a Venezuelan man is now the oldest living man, Guinness World Records, crowned, Juan Vicente Mora with the record just days before he is set to turn 113. Yes, you heard correctly, 113 years old. He was born back in 1909 and since then has expanded his family to include 11 children, 41 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, and 12 great-great-grandchildren. So what's his secret? He says throughout his long life, he's learned the important things. Number one on the list, oh, what a shocker, but how refreshing, the love of God. Yep, that was his first thing that he said in terms of ways to live a good life. The love of family was second, and he said, you know what, you have to have a good attitude and be willing to work hard. So the love of God, the love of family, and we must be willing to get up early to go to work. He turns 113 on May 27th. 15 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday morning. We'll be right back.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
When you see the world with Catholic eyes, you see God's hand at work in human history. You see the true, the good, and the beautiful. With a Master's of Arts in Catholic Studies from Franciscan University of Steubenville, you see the world as it truly is. This online program helps you see art, literature, theology, psychology, and more as occasions for grace. Find out more about the Master's in Catholic Studies at franciscan.edu/mcs. That's franciscan.edu/mcs.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
Now is a great time to learn about CMF Curo as a pro-life Catholic healthcare option for your family. You can join anytime throughout the year. Plus, you'll experience an authentic Catholic community that cares about your health, spirit, mind, and body. Call 833-GET-CURO. That's 833-GETCURO. Or visit MyCatholicHealthcare.com to learn more about CMF Curo.
There's a very important summit coming up next month, and we want to direct you to the Ruth Institute website, ruthinstitute.org, fifth annual summit for survivors of the sexual revolution, fighting for your family, arming you for success. And talk about great speakers. In addition, of course, to our guests from the Ruth Institute, our friend Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morse, you have Christian Hawkins, president for Students of Life, and also, of course, Walter Heyer, who's an amazing speaker whose story is so powerful. And he is out there on the front lines doing whatever he can to address this gender ideology that has just gone so off the charts. Jen, thanks so much for joining us. What an incredible lineup. So first, let's get the housekeeping details in terms of the summit, the overall theme, and some of the other speakers. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yes. Well, thanks so much for having me on. And it's always a blast to talk to you, Teresa, because you get it. You totally get what we're dealing with here. Yes, the summit will be held in Lake Charles, Louisiana on June 24th and 25th, which happens to be the seventh anniversary of the Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage across the country. So that's kind of an interesting thing. It's a two-day summit. It starts on Friday. It's all-day Friday, an awards dinner on Friday evening, and then all-day Saturday. The people we'll be giving awards to will be given an award to Kristen Hawkins, and she'll be the keynote speaker at that dinner. And then we will give Walt Heyer an award for what we call the Public Witness of the Year, because we do this every year. And he's the person we're honoring for his testimony about what the sexual revolution is really like. And then we have the Scholar of the Year is going to be Dr. Scott Yenner, who has written two very important books on political philosophy about that concerns the family. And then finally, our Activists of the Year are two ladies who are called Advocates Protecting Children, who are fighting on the gender ideology issue. And these two women are on fire. Teresa, I can't even tell you everything they're doing. You know, so we like to honor people that people have heard of, but we also like to honor people that haven't been heard of, you know,
sure.
and that, you know, you in the audience can relate to and say, hey, if these two ladies can fight the school board and fight the libraries and write little books, write children's books and all these other things that these two ladies are doing, well, back alley, maybe I can do it too, you know. So that's the way we look at the whole process here of trying to mobilize an army to deal with the problems of the sexual revolution.
We're talking to Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morris from the Ruth Institute. The website is ruthinstitute.org, and we're talking about a very powerful and important summit addressing so much about the sexual revolution and the damage it's done, and this is going to be an incredible event. So will you be recording these talks? In I don't want to encourage people not to go because we want people to go, but will they be available at some point afterwards if they can't get there?
Yes. And here's the deal with that. Okay, you can buy a virtual pass right now.
Okay, good,
and,
good.
You know, for $30, you can sit in your house and watch it and have 15 people in there, and you can all watch it at the same time for the same $30, you know. And if you buy the pass, what we will do when the summit is over is we will give you a link to the raw footage so you can see it right away, you know, within a week or something. But the rest of the material will be produced and posted on our website, but it will take a while, you know, because video is a lot more work than radio, as you know. You know, because it's bigger files and has to be processed and it's got to look right and it just sound right and so on and so forth. So we end up posting that material over the course of the next, like, 6 months before it's all up there. But so if you buy the virtual pass, you can see the stuff right away and have the benefit of it, you know, and have the advantage of being able to partake of it and so on and so forth. And truthfully, Teresa, the thing that it makes the Ruth Institute, I think, different from other organizations, we're not so much chasing headlines. The material we produce will be of value a year from now, two years from now. People are still watching stuff from our very first summit. You know, because it's evergreen.
Well, I was just going to say it's evergreen, and it's even more timely now because it shows us the truth of natural law and the dignity of the human person.
Yes.
But there are some headlines that are backing up and supporting the importance of your work. I don't know if you heard this story. I sent you another one, but I saw something the other night, and I almost, it's not too much it surprises me, but I almost fell off my couch. I thought it was a story from the satirical Christian website, the Babylon Bee, because it was so bizarre. So there's a story, I don't know if you heard about this, but it's over in Wisconsin in a little town of less than 4,000 people where two eighth graders are being charged with sexual harassment, criminal charges. They had an attorney in the story and everything because they didn't refer to a fellow student by the pronoun that this person came up with overnight. He wanted to be referred to as a they, as opposed to his name and his obviously sex as a male. And they called him by his name or called him a boy, whatever. And it wasn't a case of bullying. He just didn't refer to him as a boy wanted to refer to. And he was charged. These two kids were charged criminally.
Yes. Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. As a matter of fact, we just put out a press release on we're about to put out a press release on this very topic because what it shows, Teresa, you've been following our work long enough. You know that The whole sexual revolution has to be propped up by the state. It has to be propped up with lots and lots of force and coercion and nonstop propaganda. And so now what you've got here is kids, eighth grade boys, being harassed by the state, right, to get them in line with the new latest iteration of craziness, irrationality, and inhumanity, you know, that the revolutionaries are coming up with. No normal person is going to call a boy a girl. You know, it's just not going to happen. So if you insist that this is what the new ideology, the new dispensation, the new version of the heresy, you know, if this is the form it now takes, we've all got to cooperate with this. You've got to use force. Okay, and so now you've got eighth grade kids who are facing the prospect of being labeled sex offenders. Right,
right, having that in their record for the rest of their lives, right.
Sex offenders, they're sex offenders. Meanwhile, down in Loudoun County, you know, you probably heard about this, I don't know, months ago by now, well, maybe almost a year by now, a girl was actually assaulted in the girls' restroom by a boy who was wearing a skirt and said he was a girl. right? Then he got into the restroom and he assaulted this girl in the privacy of the girl's bathroom. And Loudoun County Public Schools tried to cover for that, right? So we have a case of actual sexual assault being swept away.
Right,
swept
ignored.
Under the rug,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because it disrupts the narrative. And a fake charge of sexual harassment being concocted to put on a couple of boys who sound like they were pretty innocent, you know. So this is the irrationality of the sexual revolution. And Catholics, you need to stop being afraid to defend your faith. That's the other thing that we're going to do with this summit.
Let's talk about that when we come back, Jen, after the break, because there's so much more to talk about. Again, I want to direct folks to the Ruth Institute website and look at the conference. And if you can't get there in person, which I would highly encourage you to do, because there's a lot of great networking you can do with other families and people who are working on this issue, but it is available. You can get a pass and watch it on your own schedule. But really, really important stuff. More with Dr. Jen when we come back.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I want you to have such confidence in the Lord that you'll find such hope and see the beauty of the Lord, the majesty of God. What did our Lord say, huh? If your sins are as scarlet, oh, what? What's going to happen? They shall be made white as snow.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Why is the calling on the name of Jesus so powerful? According to the Catholic Catechism, to pray Jesus is to invoke him and to call him within us. We are welcoming the Son of God who loved us and gave himself up for us. A simple invocation developed through tradition in both East and West and transmitted by the spiritual writers of the Sinai, Syria, and Mount Athos is, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on us sinners. Through this prayer, the human heart is open to human wretchedness and the Savior's mercy. Invoking the holy name of Jesus is the simplest way of praying always. If the heart is humbly attentive, the prayer is not lost by heaping up empty phrases. It holds fast to the word and brings forth fruit with patience. The prayer of the church also honors the heart of Jesus and the way of the cross, which we call making the stations. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Do you wish you could have discussions about difficult topics with your adult children? If so, don't worry. You're not alone. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak. And our new book, Having Meaningful, Sometimes Difficult Conversations with Your Adult Sons and Daughters, can help you draw closer to your adult children and help guide them on the path to more faithful and meaningful lives.
You can get our latest book and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
RuthInstitute.org, big conference coming up. It's an annual event, and powerhouse speakers as usual, including our friend Dr. Jen on the phone with us this morning, RuthInstitute.org. All the information there is on the homepage. A number of just amazing pro-life and pro-family warriors are going to be recognized at this important conference, and all the details are there. You can check it out on the homepage. Jen, we cannot be afraid. I think it's really important to help people understand. I love what Pope Benedict said so many years ago. He was speaking to young people, and he said, God and the Ten Commandments are not, what was the phrase he used? But he said, this is all about love. It's not about restrictions.
Right.
People paint God in the church as this ogre, you know, trying to squash our fun, and yet it's just the opposite, because when you live in God's love, when you live the way we're designed, it results, I mean, not that we're going to have a perfect life because we live in a fallen world, but you follow God's design in the natural law as we were made in his image and likeness, male and female, you're going to be a lot better off. There was just a story that came out a couple weeks ago about the continued epidemic of sexually transmitted diseases.
Surprise, surprise.
Shocker.
Right. Right, right. Yeah, so I like what you said there, that we need to be able to defend our beliefs without fear, without apology, to paraphrase that crazy thing that the pro-abortion people say. Defend your values without fear or apology. And one of the things we're going to do at the summit, I'm going to give myself a 15-minute time slot. I'm not pontificating myself. I've got a 15-minute talk that I'm doing at the beginning of the day on Saturday at the summit, and it's called Defend Your Values Like a Pro. And basically what it is, a 15-minute defense of traditional Christian sexual ethics with a slideshow, you know, with PowerPoint slides and so on. And when you go to the summit and you complete the whole day summit training, we will give you the flash drive that has the slides on it, that has the script on it, and that has a video of me doing the talk. And the point is that you can do that talk yourself. Back in the day of pro-life movement, the early days of the pro-life movement, I don't know if you ever knew this guy, Dr. Jack Wilkie in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, very well. I knew. I've interviewed him. Yeah, great work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and one of the things he did was he created a slideshow that showed fetal development, and hundreds of people used that slideshow, you know, to keep the primary issue in focus. The issue is, what is it that's in the womb? It is a human person in the womb, and Dr. Wilkie equipped hundreds, if not thousands, of people to make that case and to keep that point before the public. And the comparable thing for us at the Roop Institute is, what is marriage all about in the first place? What do we owe to children? What do we owe them? And our case is that traditional Christian sexual ethics protects the interests of children better than anything else that anybody has ever tried. The traditional Christian sexual ethics, which is now largely Catholic teaching, we're kind of the last guys holding the flag. Mm-hmm. At least officially. But you know, it's the common heritage of the entire Judeo-Christian tradition, right? They, at one time, everybody thought these things that we think. And this is the key issue. What do we owe to children? And I think our people, all of you all listening there on Ave Maria Radio, you need to be confident that what the church is teaching is correct and humane and true and beautiful, and that this is your best chance for having a good life. Of course, bad things can still happen. We're not utopians, unlike our opponents, you know, who always have some new fantasy. But you can be confident. When you leave this summit, you are going to be confident. And that's the key thing. Even if you can't answer every question on the spot, you will know where to find the answers. And you will know that one way or the other, it was not a good faith question, and you don't even have to answer the stinking question because mm-hmm. it was really a grenade and not an attempted debate, right? So all of that is going to be part of the training that will be part of the summit for survivors of the sexual revolution, and that's why people should hop on a plane or get in the car and come on over to Lake Charles at the end of June.
All right, so RuthInstitute.org, we're chatting with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris about a big summit coming up, as she mentioned, June 24th and 25th. What I think is so important for people to realize, we were talking about this during the break, Jen, that for once we're finally seeing, and they don't know how to respond. This is why they respond with the theater. It's all theater emotions and semantics for them.
They've never had
to sit down and have a real discussion, as you said, about the life in the womb. Is it a life? Is it a life? And if you say yes, then, okay, what then? Then you're okay for murder. Not only that, but if you look at some of the most ridiculous slogans, if you were watching some of the protests over the weekend where these women in Hollywood were holding the signs, no uterus, no opinion, and yet they were signing autographs, the Julia Louise Dreyfuses of the world and Laura Derns and whatnot, signing the arms and the signs of men who were there to support them. So I guess those men can have an opinion. And who made the first opinion about Roe v. Wade? All male justices back mm-hmm. in 1973. So that's okay. And then if you look mm-hmm. at the problem of lost fatherhood, and you know this better than anybody yeah. else, in terms of yeah. what the sexual revolution has given particular communities, especially minority communities, which the left says they care so much about. 70% of minority children are born into fatherless homes. And what does that do? And here are these women saying that no uterus, no opinion. So they don't want the father in any of this
involved.
Discussion involved. They and yet, at the same time, they talk out of both sides of their mouth and say they want the support from men in other areas. And they sit there and they say that abortion is a difficult decision. Well, why wouldn't you want the support of the father involved if it's a difficult decision? It makes no sense. And so these are the kinds of questions. I always find that when you're in a discussion with someone, asking questions always helps. Okay, well, let's. What do you mean by this? Okay, so let's look at this. No uterus, no opinion. And then you go down that. A lot of this, I think, and this is why your conference is so important, it equips us to have conversations.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. And the other big problem is, of course, these people claim to not know what a woman is anymore.
Right.
Just like that, they know what a woman is now. You know, 2 weeks ago, they weren't sure that Rachel right. Levine counted as a woman. Bruce Jenner's a woman. You know, this kind of stuff. So the sexual revolution is fundamentally irrational.
Right.
It's fundamentally irrational. And the Catholic alternative is coherent, completely coherent. All the moving parts fit together in Catholic doctrine in this area, right? And the sexual revolution, none of it fits together. It doesn't fit together from 1 week to the next. It doesn't fit together, right? They're
right.
tripping over self-contradictions. But the last thing I want to point out is I want to pick up on one thing you said, Teresa. Marginalizing men from the conversation was a huge strategic victory for the sexual revolutionaries.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay? Getting them out of the home, getting the men out of the home, keeping them out of the conversation. What that meant was to leave the women and children sitting ducks. And gentlemen, you need to get back in the fray. I'm sorry. I don't
exactly. You know who talked about this years ago, in addition to Benedict and St. Pope Paul VI? Archbishop Chaput spoke about this so strongly when he would write about this, talking about the fact that birth control really gives men anything, the freedom to do anything they want with women. And to stand there and say, no uterus, no opinion.
Yeah,
you talk about you're saying that it's up to you, but at the same time you're yelling and screaming at men because you're mistreated. Well, why do you think you're right? It makes absolutely no sense, and that's
right.
why we have to be able to confidently and lovingly, because we want people to come to the truth, to be able to have those conversations of consequence, as we say on Crest in the Afternoon, and to be able to ask those questions. But God love you. I could talk to you for hours. We have to have you back on before the conference.
I know.
Coming up in June, check it out, ruthinstitute.org, amazing speakers. Do not be afraid. We have the truth. Ask questions. Have the information. People need this. It's for their benefit, because we love them and we want the best for them, and so, of course, does our Lord and the Church. RuthInstitute.org, June 24th and 25th. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a little lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, I live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have, and we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize his presence. And in proportion as we believe that he is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What's the definition of frustration? Frustration is the difference between the way it is and the way you want it to be. It's hard to change the way it is. The way it is sometimes is other people, life, circumstances. The way you want it to be is in your power to change. You can close the gap between reality and what you want. The smaller that gap, the less your frustration. It is always easier to change oneself than to change reality. Frustration isn't always what happens out there. It is how we look at what happens out there.
We should start a new segment. Where in the world is Joni? Where in the world is Joan Lewis? Because last week she was in New York, and this week she is in beautiful Poland. All right, so you spoke at a conference last night. You were the keynote, And you're still there. So tell us what your talk was focused on. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's really an amazing conference, Teresa, and I am delighted to be able to have this opportunity. It's the Ave Maria Law School got together with the Cardinal Stephen Wyszynski University, and the love of their individual and separate lives, of course, is St. John Paul. And the all of the talks, so today's a full day, tomorrow is a full day, and then last night was the opening dinner at which I spoke. And the focus is on John Paul's natural law legacy and international human rights, subtitle Toward a Century of Persuasion. And just amazing guests. Now, what they wanted me to do, I mean, you have guests here who are obviously law professors. Oh, did you hear that? I'm in the dining area.
In case you hey, it's natural that, sound, as we say in radio. No problem. Go ahead.
Exactly, yeah. But so many amazing members of European Parliament, professors of politics, University of Dallas, and law school deans, both here, at the Wyszynski University and Ave Maria, and then editors-in-chief, for example, public discourse and director of academic programs at the Witherspoon Institute, people from Princeton, people from Navarra University in Spain, speaking on all topics related to John Paul, human rights and international human rights and law. And I just heard a professor speak on the John Paul II Charter on the Rights of the Family in the Light of the Natural Law.
Wow.
And so what you have speakers, and then you have panels that are moderated. You'll have your keynote speaker every day, and then a panel like Solène Padier, who's the European correspondent for the Register. She's moderating this afternoon's panel. And then Alejandro Bermudez moderated the panel this morning and everything. And so the day starts with Mass at 8, and then after that, breakfast before that. And then after that, we all come out to the university, and the morning begins about 8:45. Now, today began with the Archbishop of Warsaw, Cardinal Nitsch. It's funny, I met two cardinals. Their last names both have four letters, and I didn't know how to pronounce either of them, but now I know. So the Archbishop of Warsaw is Cardinal Nitsch. And then I spent quite some time yesterday, including he was my dinner companion at the head table with Cardinal Eich of Utrecht in the Netherlands. And he'd been asked to participate in this, but then he was in Rome for Sunday's canonization of 10 new saints, including St. Titus Brandsma, a priest, of course, and a journalist. And I don't know.
Oops, are you there? All right, we're going to have to call Joni back. Joan is talking to us from Warsaw, where she was a keynote speaker at a conference last night and sharing with us some of the discussions they had. And she will be back in Rome in a few days, so we'll reconnect with her in just a minute. But just a reminder that the Titus Brandsma, New Saint Titus Brandsma, is so fascinating to read about. And if you go to ncregister.com, or check out the Catholic News Agency website, both those sites have beautiful stories about this amazing saint who's considered really the new saint of journalism. And much of what he fought for during World War II, he was from the Netherlands, he was Dutch, is very similar to what's going on right now in our world with propaganda. And some of the quotes that he has regarding propaganda, it sounds like someone who is speaking about the secular media today and the culture in terms of the culture of death. He lost his life in Dachau, and he was actually promised a peaceful life. It's interesting. He was a Carmelite. And when you think about Carmelites, you think about the contemplative life and, you know, times of prayer, extended days of prayer. Obviously, he had that, but he had a second vocation. And what he really loved to do was to educate Catholics, especially Catholics who were in newspaper at the time, because basically that's all they had. They didn't have all the things that we have now, right? Very similar to what Maximilian Kolbe worked with. And he would go around and ensure that Catholic publications were not involved in promoting any type of Nazi propaganda. And so when the Nazis got wind of this, they went to him and said, oh, we can promise you a nice, peaceful life in a cell in a monastery somewhere, but you need to come out and tell Catholic publications that they can go ahead and publish our propaganda. You need to be able to support this and get it out there into the papers, obviously because they wanted to continue the brainwashing within the church. He said no and was arrested and was sent to Dachau and was starved. And then eventually he was actually put to death with carbolic acid. And I just learned, Joni, we have you back on the line. I was talking about St. Titus Bransma, that the nurse who actually administered the shot of carbolic acid eventually converted. It's an amazing story with Titus Bransma and what he stands for. Some of the statements that he made regarding propaganda and journalism, you and I could make those statements today.
Exactly. And I mean, his what got him put in Dachau, of course, was his anti-Nazi, propaganda, which I think you're going to have to expect that from someone who's a priest, much less, someone of a deep religious faith. But it was a wonderful story, and it was great to see the cardinal yesterday. And he was supposed to have arrived the day before. He was supposed to have come in Monday, but then the Dutch embassy to the Holy See decided that he should be a speaker at some event on Monday night, so he canceled his flight. And there were a whole bunch of us, even though we didn't all know one another, there were a whole bunch of us from Rome on the 8:00 a.m. flight to Munich and then to, and then to Poland. So, but the cardinal said, so honored and all the wonderful events for this priest. Oh, and Teresa, I did put this on my blog. In 1985, when Bransma was beatified by Pope John Paul, it was the Dutch florist who sent all the flowers in for the beatification ceremony in St. Peter's Square, because, Pope John Paul did both beatifications and canonizations, whereas beatifications now are usually in the diocese. Anyway, that started the Easter tradition of sending flowers to Rome at Easter for the papal altar.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
I know. So we've had all these decades of flowers from them, thanks to Titus becoming both beatified and now a saint. But I think when we lost each other, I was just telling you that what I had been asked, I saw the curriculum vitae and the speeches of all the people invited to this conference. I think there's 40 or 50 speakers. And what they wanted of me, they heard that Joan knew the Pope. I worked for him. I'd had interchanges. I was on Vatican delegations and had been to Mass a number of times in his chapel, et cetera. So they wanted the personal story. I talked about, John Paul the man, his humanity, the wonderful marriage of the down-to-earthness in him and yet the mysticism. So the various parts of his personality, any of the personal conversations that I did have with him, the personal meetings, the times after Mass. And because my talk was entitled, I Made Cookies for a Saint, I obviously, that was
I remember that, yeah.
Now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who would make, why would someone make cookies for a pope in the first place? So, and then I focused on his humor. And over the years, I had a collection of things, or just things that I had kind of kept to one side as I might be reading something that John Paul, when I worked at Beast. And there were some wonderful good stories about, and the Polish particularly liked this last night, those who are, from the Cardinal Wyszyński University, they all did, but like this. But one of the first stories I ever heard, but it was actually in Wadowice where John Paul was born. Oh, 102 years ago today, by the way. May 18th, 1920. And he's made a cardinal, all right? And so we have Cardinal Wojtyła coming to the Vatican for the first time as a cardinal. And he's entering the Santa Anna entrance to the Vatican. The Swiss guards smartly salute him. And then one of them kind of relaxes and, Your Eminence, can we ask you a question? Why, certainly, young man. Well, we heard that Polish cardinals ski. Is that actually true? And he said, well, yeah, 50% of the cardinals ski. Really? We didn't know that. So how many cardinals are there? And he said, two. So John Paul was the 50% of the two Polish cardinals who skied.
But, that's cute.
And anyway, the other story, and the thing is, it's on my phone, so I can't read the screen of my phone that I know of and talk to you. I hope I get this right. This is John Paul's favorite story. It seems that there were really only two solutions. Now, we're going back a few decades here. Only two solutions to the Eastern European crisis. The one solution, of course, was realistic, and the other one was miraculous. Now, it seems that the realistic solution was Our Lady of Częstochowa coming down to Poland with all the angels and saints and encouraging a decision that would create peace in the middle, in Eastern Europe. And the miraculous solution was that all the nations agreed to it. So,
wow.
Some pretty good, no, there were some really good stories, but just being here with these scholars, with these eminent professors of law, of natural law, all focusing on some aspect of John Paul's papacy, it's wonderful to kind of jump back to those days when I was reading a lot of the documents that they were, and or translating, a lot of the documents that they were talking about, and Evangelium Vitae, and, obviously the abortion, the right to life issues have come up. That's all part of law. And, you know, where have we gone today with law that all of a sudden a line that actually distinguished right from wrong, for example, killing from, where are we today in law when that line has been withdrawn?
Oh, don't get me started. I was just talking about this with Jennifer Roback Morris from the Ruth Institute. But before we let you go, we have about 2 minutes left. I know that Warsaw is about, 600 miles from Ukraine. What's the feeling there regarding the war in Ukraine?
Well, the openness to helping. I'm actually glad you asked that because about 24 hours ago, as you and I speak, coming out of the airport, waiting in line for a taxi, there were huge numbers of people that came out with big luggage carts filled with supplies. Well, it said on Ukraine. I mean, it was the Polish name for Ukraine. And as far as I understand, this had come in and was destined for the refugees who have come here because these people are so open and welcoming. And just are treating, all the people that they have received as members of their own family and taking them into their own homes in many, many cases, obviously, from single people to a mother with two children, because it's going to be mostly mothers and children, with the men being constrained to remain in Ukraine, husbands and fathers, where of a certain age, they have to remain and fight. But people here are very, very proud, and if you compliment them, which I have done to, quite a number of people, ranging from taxi drivers to people in the hotel to people at the conference, just, thank you for opening your hearts and your homes to the Ukrainians and welcoming them, and they're so pleased. They just really smile broadly when you indicate that the huge numbers of people they receive.
Yeah, well, Poland is such a beautiful, beautiful country. I loved it, and I've been there twice or three times,
yes.
I think. But I'm telling you, the churches and the love of the faith and the determination, we can learn so much from the Polish people. It's unbelievable. Joni, we're out of time, sweet pea. When are you coming back to Roma? When are you back to Rome?
Oh, I come back to Rome, Saturday. So the conference tomorrow. And then because I've never been here in Warsaw, I'm just staying one more day to, I'm not sure what I'm going to see yet. But anyway,
it's beautiful.
I'll let you know next week where
I'll
be.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I love Warsaw. It's beautiful. Thank you so much. Safe travels. And we're honored that you could join us, especially since you were a keynote speaker at this major international conference. We'll be right back to let you know what's coming up in the show tomorrow. Some guy named Girardelli Grendy Good. I don't know who he is. I've never heard of him. Have you? We'll explain when we come back, or at least try to.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school.
They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Nestled under the warm Florida sun is a university whose name indicates a vocational call. Ave Maria, Latin for Hail Mary, recalls the angel Gabriel's announcement to Mary of her future vocation, becoming the Mother of God. Enriched by God's grace, Mary freely ascends to this call. This is the model for all students. Come to Ave Maria University, where you'll be empowered to clearly see your vocational call, whatever that call might be. Ave Maria University, your vocation location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Thank you so much for listening to EWTN. John Lagunas, Director of Admissions and Enrollment Management for Sacred Heart in the Archdiocese of Detroit, joining us for a really cool new online course. And then Dr. Ray Guarendi, I know who he is, I was just kidding, joining us tomorrow on the Good News Cruise. See you later. Have a great day. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.